some of us about specific practical cases that Sally will visit today. Before that, we started talking a little bit about the theory and the concepts. So what I want to talk about today is I'll restate the points about the theory and concepts so we'll all be properly briefed, and then talk a little bit about how that may affect some of the application practically, and maybe, if we have time, a few more practical components. Of course, we're not unaware of the fact that Hanukkah is coming up, so God willing, next week we'll talk a little bit about something Hanukkah-oriented. Okay, so just to bring everybody up to speed, so we started talking about the concept of the prohibition of ribbis and how it's a very unusual concept because on the surface, we could see it as being a benot l'chaver kind of violation. We could see it as being an interpersonal offense. There certainly is a model of interest charging, which you'll associate with a loan shark, let's say, where you are charging interest in a predatory way. And, for example, the word usury, which has meant different things in different generations and different contexts, but in a modern usage, the word usury is often a word for what's also known as predatory lending, that you are lending in a way that you plan on taking advantage of the person who you are lending to. So I could paint a picture where we could certainly see lending ribbis as a moral offense. Let's say I have an elderly widow who can't make rent, and I say, well, I'll cover your rent this week as long as you pay me 50% interest by next month. And when she can't pay 50% interest by next month, she can't even pay rent. So then I say, okay, well, then it's just going to keep racking up. And after a few months, she owes me more than she could ever make back, and I take advantage in any way that I want to. So that's clearly a moral offense. And that's clearly something that we can relate to as something that's improper. So if you're going to say that that's what the Torah is prohibiting, so then that wouldn't be too hard to understand. But what we find is we find many indications that that's not what the Torah is prohibiting. That is prohibited, that's certainly bad, but that when we talk about the prohibition of ribbis in a plain sense, so we're talking about something that falls very far short of what we just described. And there are a number of differences that we highlighted. First of all, we're not only talking about exploitative rates of interest, we're talking about any interest, which means even things that will be very much in line with the market, with standard business practices, with what you get from a bank, anything that would be any interest at all is prohibited, no matter how it falls within the spectrum of what's considered fair, what's considered exploitative. So that's one very crucial difference. Second of all, if we're going to understand this to be some type of an interpersonal offense, let's say it's comparable to a type of theft, instead of just grabbing money out of your pocket, I'm forcing you to give me money that's not reasonable, but it's basically somewhat comparable to stealing from you. So then there are, again, very key differences, because normally if I steal money from you, so I'm the criminal, you're the victim. Yet here we find the Gemara says that we're both considered to be guilty of violation of ribbis, that even the victim, so to speak, the person paying ribbis, is just as guilty of a transgression. And also, if you want to use a model of theft, if the victim says, instead of giving $100 over at gunpoint, he says, listen, I have $100 I want to give you as a gift, I like you very much, and here's $100 I'm giving you with great joy, so that should be totally permitted. That's not considered to be theft in any sense of the word. And yet, if you transfer that over to ribbis, it doesn't help at all. If the borrower comes to you and says, listen, I have a business deal I'm looking to invest in, and therefore we'd all be very much in great shape if you'll give me money at whatever percent interest, which I'll happily, gladly pay, and it'll be totally worth my while, doesn't make a difference. The fact that he is completely mofo, the fact that he's completely willing to do it, does not at all mitigate the concept. So those are already three differences. I'll add a fourth difference, which is also relevant, is the fact that normally if we relate to this as a principle of morality, as a principle of decency, so then it should apply to the whole world. You have to treat the whole world in a decent moral way. So this should be something that should be prohibited whether you're dealing with Jews or non-Jews. And yet we find the prohibition of ribbis, at least in the basic sense, where we're not talking about the widow who can't pay her rent, the basic prohibition of ribbis explicitly in the Torah is only applied to Jews, and the Torah is more explicit about this than other such issues, where it says this is a concept between Jews and doesn't have to be extended to non-Jews. So that's yet again another crucial difference that you're going to find between this and the model that we originally mentioned of a more obvious moral type of offense. We'll throw in the fifth striking issue, the striking question, is that you find when it comes to ribbis that there's a Torah prohibition, and then there is extensive rabbinic legislation. There is a quite large body of rabbinic laws that builds on the Torah prohibition. So the fact that the rabbis made such extensive legislation to add on to this prohibition is itself striking, says something about what we're talking about. But it's also interesting to contrast what's in the HaTorah and what's not. And if we're talking about the fact that you're taking money from somebody who can't really afford it, so then you think the focus is on the fact that you're taking their money. And the interesting thing is that the prohibition of ribbis min HaTorah is violated when specifically you make the deal at the beginning. That's our focus. Our focus is what we call ribbis ketzutza, that when I lend you the money, I say, I'm going to pay you back, I'm going to lend you $100, you have to pay me back $110. But if I lend you $100 and don't say anything, and then later on when you come to pay me back, I say, you know what, I think you should pay me an extra $10 because I was so generous to you, even if I say that in a intimidating kind of way and I basically make you do it against your will, so morally that's just as bad, but the issue of ribbis is somehow mitigated. That's not done, it's not the original agreement. That's when the focus is on, it has to be that that's the deal to begin with. We call ribbis ketzutza. Another question that's posed out there.
So it doesn't make a difference if you can afford it or not.
Correct.
If you're a millionaire,
Right. So all of that, again, seems to highlight something different going on here. So all of these questions, before trying to have an approach to them, they all highlight the fact that what you seem to have here, even though we're dealing with money, and it looks like this should be in the section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with money, we call Choshen Mishpat, the whole part of the code of Jewish law that's all about civil law, monetary rules. You seem to get the sense that maybe this is not a monetary concept. Maybe this is not a Choshen Mishpat type rule, but that really this is more of a ritual idea, that it belongs in the section of Shulchan Aruch that deals with ritual law, which we call Yerideya. And the biggest clue that that might be the case is that that's actually where it is in Shulchan Aruch. If you want to look up the laws of ribbis, so you don't go to the shelf where you keep your Choshen Mishpat Svarim, but you go to the shelf where the Yerideya is, together with Kashrus and Nida and Sittus and all of that, and Shatnez and all of that, that's not Sittus, but Shatnez and Kashrus and Nida, that's where you find the laws of, that's where you find the laws of ribbis. So all of that is striking. So let us deposit maybe two theories about what is going on when it comes to ribbis. And how do we address these questions? So one approach we could take that we mentioned is that we could say that really it is an interpersonal offense. It is a ben adam l'chavero, but it's not a standard ben adam l'chavero. It's not a basic principle of morality that should apply to the whole world. But rather, it's a special sense of bonding between the Jewish people. That it's a way of enhancing the familial atmosphere between Jews. And it's a way of saying that, yes, it's true that it's completely acceptable business practice to lend money and charge a basic minimal interest rate. That is totally fine. It's not exploitative. It's not immoral. It's not indecent. But you don't do that to your brother. That your brother you treat differently. And therefore, the absence of any type of ribbis is a way of saying that the whole Jewish family is considered to be just that, considered to be a family, and they're connected in that way. And this is suggested by the Ramban in his commentary to Chumash. And we mentioned that the Avnei Nezer, the Slach HaShav Rebbe, the great Chassidish Posek, in his Tshuvas, he has a special section on the laws of ribbis, which he entitled Bris Achim. And the phrase Bris Achim, in addition to the fact that Bris is an anagram of the word ribbis, but also it means a covenant of brothers. It's a way of saying that this deal is a covenant of brothers. This is a unifying element that brings the Jewish family together, and that's why we have this concept. So that model would say that yes, it's a ben adam l'chavero, but it's an enhanced type of ben adam l'chavero. It's not the kind that's of general universal morality. It's a special family type of message. That doesn't answer everything, and maybe if you want to take the other approach and we want to say that it really is a Yerideya concept, that essentially it's not a ben adam l'chavero, and that's why it's not given to mechila, even it's why the victim, so to speak, is not allowed to say I'm okay with it under any circumstances. So that could be considered in perhaps the following light, that we find that in one of the three places where ribbis is discussed, it comes up in Parshas Mishpatim, and it comes up in Tevet Dvarim, but it also comes up in Parshas Bahar. So in Parshas Bahar, so it's mentioned together with the obligation of Shemitah, that during the Shemitah year, so you're not allowed to work your land. And these agricultural mitzvahs in general, but Shemitah specifically, so you find that the rabbis often connect this to the theme of Emunah, of faith in God. And we can understand why that is, because it's certainly an expression of faith, even more, it doesn't necessarily take so much faith to eat kosher food, let's say, but to observe Shemitah, that takes a lot of faith. To say, I'm going to take off 1 year out of every seven, I'm not going to work, but I'll still survive, that takes a big leap of faith. So what if we were to say the following thing? Let's say we were to say, I'm going to tell the rabbis, you know what, I'm willing not to work during the Shemitah year, But here's the deal. I'm only going to do that if you guarantee me that you will cover me for any losses. You'll sign a contract that says anything that I fall short during this year, you will compensate me for. That might theoretically be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Shemitah, but it's not impressive from an emunah point of view. That doesn't show too much faith. It shows I'm only doing it because I'm guaranteed that I'll be protected. So perhaps you could say that a similar dynamic is going on here. Now, when it comes to lending people money, so lending people money is clearly presented in the halachic literature as a tremendous chesed, as something that you do as an expression of your basic Jewish responsibility to be a descendant of Avraham Avinu. It's a basic act of kindness to other people. And there are five or six other mitzvot that are probably involved, depending on the circumstances, when one loans money to somebody else. So perhaps the whole offense of Ribbis is that you're saying, you know what, God, you want me to engage in the chesed, you want me to be Abrahamic, you want me to follow God's ways, I'll do that on one condition. I'm going to sign a contract at the beginning that says I'm only going to lend out this money if I'm guaranteed that I'll be covered just like in the bank. Just like if I left the money in the bank, I'll get some interest. So too, I'll help you out as long as you cover me the same way. But if I don't have a contract that says I'll be covered the same way, or if I don't have an agreement that says I'm going to be covered the same way, I'm not going to do it. So that's nothing wrong to the person you're helping. You may help them more to get into that circumstance. But as far as God is concerned, that's an offense to an Adam Lamakom, because you're saying that the message of the theme of Chesed that God is commanding you to engage in, you're not willing to take that leap of faith. You're only going to do it when you're contractually protected. So that model would perhaps allow it to be understood as an Adam Lamakom. This is a ritual concept. It has nothing to do with the guy you're interacting with. It has nothing to do with the monetary rights of the borrower. It has to do simply with mitzvos ben adam l'makom, and therefore it's not up to the borrower to decide to be okay with it or to participate with it in any type of permissible way. And that could also explain why the key problem is at the moment of the lending. That if you say the biblical prohibition is specifically when you lend it, and it's not about when you collect it, so it's about taking the guy's money, so this focus should be when I collect the money. But we see that it's not necessarily about that. It's about entering into the deal under these circumstances, saying I'm only going to lend the money when this is the guarantee that I have. That's the problem. And the fact that you take the money afterwards, that's incidental. That's a consequence of having this transgression performed. But that's not the transgression itself.
So the guarantee is the interest. That guarantees you'll get it.
Right. The guarantee you'll get it is interesting. So that much you don't necessarily have such a problem with, which is interesting. There's some discussion about that. To what extent do we assume that your bitachon has to go towards that kind of component as well? And just to discuss that for a second, it's interesting. So that's, it's important because if you focus on the question in the midst of lending money, so it comes up there also. You're not obligated to lend money, I should emphasize, for practical purposes. You're not obligated to lend money if you think you're going to lose the money. If you don't trust the person, if the guy is not trustworthy, and you have a sense that he's not going to give it back, or you have any reason to believe he can't give it back, or it's the circumstances are such, so you're not obligated to lend money that's going to not come back to you. You might want to give it to him as tzedakah, which also has its own set of factors to decide. But give money that you're not going to give back, that's not what we're talking about. When we talk about a loan, we're talking about letting him use your money on the assumption that you'll get it back. So the issue here that we're talking about now in terms of ribbis is you're saying, I'm willing to do that, but I also want a return on that act. I want a profit off of that. So that profit you're not allowed to guarantee yourself. But the idea that you want to guarantee that this guy's not going to run away, that this guy's not going to spend your money on drugs, something like that, so you have a right to that guarantee because there's nothing in the principle that says that you have to waive that.
So it's not a part of bitachon. You're saying, what do you want to guarantee? You're saying it's like Shemitah. Okay, so how does the profit get involved?
The bitachon is on the part of the mitzvah. You want the sky mitzvah, so to speak. That the idea that you there's no bitachon involved in not trusting the guy to pay you back, because God never made you any promise that if you lend money to somebody, he'll always pay you back. So there's no bitachon for me to believe in something that has no basis. So if a person is not trustworthy, then I shouldn't be lending to him, or I should be understanding that I'm writing off the money if I want to do that, and I'm not obligated to do that. But there's no inherent promise that your principal will get paid back. So you have every personal obligation to make sure your principal is protected. And in fact, you even find a striking view that some of the Rishonim understand that there's actually a mitzvah, the way some Rishonim say, to take collateral. So it's a funny language, because collateral sounds like something you do for your own benefit, and you find some of the Rishonim having this expression based on the pasuk that it's a mitzvah. There's a whole discussion why it should be a mitzvah. It's certainly a right. Okay, fine, you have that. Say it's a right, should be enough. You see this idea that it's actually maybe a mitzvah. So different Rishonim have different explanations why it is. You know, either because that makes the borrower feel more at ease that he's putting something out there, so he's not going to feel dependent, or because it'll make you more secure in your lending. Whatever it is, it's clearly established that to guarantee that you'll be paid back is not only appropriate, but might even be its own separately counted mitzvah. So that part, there's no betachin on that. What we're talking about here is the issue that this chesed, which it's no loss to me, so I'll get it back. But I want to say that no, I'm not going to get involved in the chesed at all unless you tell me that chesed is at least as profitable as banking. And that's
Shmita, it's different. Shmita, we're given a promise. Shemar down that I guarantee that the 6 years you'll have enough food for 7 years.
Correct. So so that's the kind
we're given the promise. If there's a bitachon, I'll be talking about
right, exactly. So that's
already.
Right, exactly. So that's the difference.
Rely on the promise.
Right, so that's the difference.
So it's written down. How could it, right.
Right. It's a written contract.
There's a written contract.
Right. Now that would
be good. We don't have God if you don't.
Now the topic, by the way,
but we don't have that.
I'm already representing.
Right, exactly. The topic, by the way, parenthetically, the topic of Shemitah B'Zmanazah and how that promise is supposed to play. It's a fascinating topic. I don't know if anybody's is on anybody's mind, as we're not really in the Shemitah yet, but that's a fascinating topic, also for a different topic. But that's exactly the point. That when it comes to Shemitah, so we have a bitachon on that. But there's no Indian that you have to have bitachon the guy's going to pay you back, because that's a separate issue. There's no promise about that. But the idea that you want to say to God, it's not enough that I'm doing your chesed, but I need a guaranteed return on that, that's where you get a problem.
And even on lending the money, as we know, the lending the money is really for 6 years, 5 years, it's only over a certain period of time.
Under some circumstances.
Right.
Assuming that there's no principle, that's a whole
right
type of stuff. Right. Okay, so now just with that introduction, which is an abbreviated version of what we spoke about before, so let's talk about how that may affect the real world a little bit. So first of all, there is an interesting discussion that Nachron thought about. What happens if I make a deal to pay Rippus? So normally any deal that I make should be binding. And the Gemara normally has a principle that Kol Tanai Shemamam and Kayim. So if I decide, and with full knowledge and consent, I decide that if you pull this chair out, I'm going to give you $100, and we agree upon that. And even though it doesn't make any sense, but we know that that's the terms. So okay, the two people who are fully informed and adults have the right to make that the monetary deal. And now I owe you $100 for moving the chair out, even though that's on the surface ridiculous. Okay, whatever deal we make, we have our interests, and that's normally acceptable. So if I make a contract that says I'm lending you $100 and you have to pay me back $120, so on the surface that should be binding. So now there's a prohibition of Rivers to make such a deal. So how did the prohibition affect the contract? So that was a debate. The Mishnah Melech was a prominent commentary on the Rambam. So the Mishnah Melech writes on the Rambam that, you know what, this is a binding arrangement that the Torah prohibited. So in the Choshen Mishpat section, the deal is valid. And in the Yerideya section, it's prohibited, which is a fascinating paradox. And some of the later Achronim thought it was impossible. So in more recent generations, for example, this is Zalman Meltzer, who lived about 50 years ago, the father of Aaron Cutler, and the Chazon Ish, lived around the same time. So they both maintained the slightly different versions that it's functionally impossible concept, that if the Torah prohibited it, then the deal does not take place. The deal is not valid. There's no such thing as something that the Torah prohibited, but monetarily is true. So this is a big discussion because it has real-world ramifications. And one proof that was brought up by some is that there is a mitzvah, which we'll talk about more in a second, there's a mitzvah to return ribbis. So if you have taken ribbis illegitimately, so now you have an obligation to give it back. So the interesting thing, or one of the interesting things, is that this does not pass on to inheritors. So somebody stole money and then died, and then his money went to his heirs. So the heirs should have to return the stolen money. But yet, if he collected money for ribbis, if he took money at interest, and then passed that money on to his heirs, they're not obligated to return it. But apparently this is an obligation only on the one who actually did it, which seems to suggest that he didn't steal money. The money is not theft, so to speak. The obligation to return it is a function of his isser, that he did a ritual prohibition in taking it back, and therefore there's a correlate, he has to give it back. But if now the money's passed on to the next generation and they didn't do anything wrong, they may not have such an obligation. So some prove that shows you that the money is legitimate, it just happened to be prohibited for the person to do. Well, the condemnation noted, you can't just to neutralize the playing field. But wait a minute, what if there was a contract to pay Rivas, and the lender died, and then the heirs come and say to the borrower, say, oh, you owe us the Rivas, because you owed our ancestor, and he's not here, so now you owe us. So they're not allowed to collect. So that shows you that it's not a legitimate deal, because even these innocent heirs are not allowed to collect. So that kind of throws you a proof in each direction, which kind of neutralizes that whole area of discussion. But it's an important point. So what happens to this money that you collect? So this is also a sort of practical issue, in the sense it doesn't really come up, but it's one of the eternal yardsticks of every issue. Anytime it's a nachgemina, how does it affect the world? So Kedusha Isha often comes up. So can you marry a woman under these circumstances? Which basically would mean, in this purpose, is, let's say a person borrowed money beribis, lent money beribis. So I said, I'll lend you $100, and I want you to pay me back $100 and a gold ring. Gold ring is the interest. So you give me the gold ring as interest. I take the gold ring, and I want to marry my wife with it. I say, here, I'm using this ring, Harei HaMikudesh. So, as we know, been to a wedding, you've listened carefully in the chuppah, so often the Masada Kedushin is asking the Kala, as in the Chasana, is it your ring? Did you pay for it? Is it yours? That's very important. So, is the ring his? Does he have the right to do that? Is the marriage valid under those circumstances? So a lot of the Rishonim seem to say that it is, either explicitly or implicitly. It's the Gemara addresses a different thing. The Gemara doesn't address this explicitly, so it was left for the Rishonim to figure out. It's a very complicated passage in the Gemara. As the Gemara says, you want to talk about really romantic models for Kedushin. So how about this romantic model? Let's say you say to a woman, okay, I'll lend you $100. You know what? You can keep it. Ariat Mekudesh is good with that money. So the Gemara says that doesn't work, because the assumption is, when you lend people money, that they're going to spend it. It's not like an item they're going to give you back. So when you waive a loan, when you say the $100 I gave you, you can keep, you don't actually give them anything. They just owed you $100, which you're forgetting. So it's not like you actually gave the kala anything. So that doesn't count for kedushin. So you can't say that $100 should be kept of kedushin. But the Gemara says, again, this is ultra romantic way to get married. Let's say you say, okay, you owe me $100, it was due December 1st. But because I love you so much, you can pay me back January 1st. And the hana of that month, the fact that she gets an extra month, if that hana is worth a shava pruta, so then you can use that hana to marry a woman. And how do you define if it's worth a shava pruta or not? How do you decide how much it's worth? Because you calculate, it's kind of a funny thing, you calculate how much would she pay if there was somebody who could convince me to wait the extra month. So how much would she pay that guy to convince me? The guy says, I'll offer you a service, I'll convince your lender to wait an extra month. So is it worth a quarter to you? Would you pay 25 cents for that? So if you would, so then it's worth more than a shava pruta, so then that benefits you could use. So the Gemara says, but that you shouldn't do, because as romantic as it is, that looks like ribbis already. That looks like you're benefiting from waiting. And it's not,
say you're earning interest that month.
Right, so it's not actual ribbis, but it sounds like you're creating a benefit from waiting for the extra month. So that already looks like ribbis. Like Mark says, clearly it's not ribbis, because it calls it haromas ribbis. It kind of looks like ribbis. It's a hard word to translate. It kind of looks like interest. So the Gemara says you shouldn't do that. But it sounds like it works. It sounds like that would be effective kedushin, that is your money, but it's not right to do it. So based on that, everyone discusses, so what if it was actual ribbis? Would it still work? What if I actually said, I collected, let's say, not from the woman, but from somebody else. I collected a ring as ribbis, and I used the ring then to give to my wife as kesef kedushin. So a lot of Rishonim thought, yeah, that would be effective. But that's the ribbis is essentially yours. And also to do this is wrong, but it still is effective in terms of kedushin. Again, not a great way to start off your life together, but maybe in theory that could work. So all of this gets into this whole discussion about what exactly do we mean we have an obligation to return ribbis. So what does that mean? Does that mean this is a function of monetary law, because you basically stole something, so now you have to give back stolen money? Or do we say that no, it's not stolen money? Monetarily it's yours. It's just a prohibition to have it. Therefore, there's a separate mitzvah as a function of this prohibition. And some note that the Rambam doesn't list the mitzvah of Hashavas Ribbis, doesn't list the mitzvah to give it back, which some of the commentaries understood. That's because he seems to see it as a extension of the concept of theft. You can't steal money, you have to give it back. And so there's a special mitzvah to give back stolen money. So presumably Ribbis is included in that. It doesn't have to count as a separate mitzvah. while others who did count it separately said maybe it is a separate mitzvah. So, for example, there's a machlokas in the Gemara, but the way we paskin is that ribbis kitzutza, if it's real ribbis daraisa, full-blown ribbis, so then that's yotze b'dayanim, which means that the bezdin can get involved, and the bezdin is going to enforce the returning of this ribbis. So there's a whole discussion still, how much do we learn from that? What does that mean? Does that mean that it's therefore a monetary concept, and that's why bezdin is getting involved? Or do we say, no, maybe it's a ritual concept, and sometimes you find that bezdin sometimes gets involved in ritual concepts also. Or maybe it's a hybrid. Maybe because of the ritual concept, that creates a monetary reality, and now it's a monetary debt. So now the lender has to pay back this debt, which is created by a ritual law. Now it's a monetary debt, so the bezdin has to get involved. So this creates a fascinating and very practical debate among the Rishonim, which is very instructive. If you look at the details, very instructive of what we're talking about. So there is a obligation to pay back ribbis. So what would happen? We've already established that if I want to borrow money from Dean Jaskol, and I say to him, listen, I'm more than happy to pay interest. I really want to. So we've already established he can't accept that. He says, no, it doesn't matter. I can't take it. So mechila does not work in that case. What would you say about the following? Let's say you didn't know about this, so I gave him the ribbis anyway. Now this week he comes to the shir, learns about all these concepts. So now he realizes that the ribbis he collected, he has an obligation to return. So this is my talking about this was my subtle way of getting him to return the ribbis that I paid him last week. So he says, comes in after shir, he says, oh, I didn't realize, I feel so awkward that you embarrassed me in the shir by talking about this in Parshat Be'eshev, which was about embarrassing people and the whole thing. But all right, whatever, what's done is done. I'm ready to pay back the ribbis. So I say to Dean Jaskol, no, it's okay, I'm happy enough that I got to use you as an example to share, you can keep the ribbis. So can I be mofel on that? So I couldn't be mofel to pay it in the first place. That was illegitimate. But now it's already been paid, and he wants to give it back to me. Can I say it's all right, keep it? So the Gaonim thought not. Right? The Gaonim seemed to say, what's the difference? Either way, it's still mechil on this prohibition of ribbis, and I can't be mochel to pay it in the first place. I can't be mochel to let you not pay it back. But the Rambam disagreed. And the Rambam seemed to say that once it's already been paid, I can be mochel my right to get it back. And Shulchan Aruch actually passes like that. Shulchan Aruch actually follows that view, that I can be mochel on the right to get it back. So the Ravid disagrees. Right? The Ravid is not unusual. The Ravid comments the Rambam, he thinks she's wrong. So the Ravid says, you're also, he thinks she's wrong. I understand, that's the whole, we've understood the whole time, that you're not allowed to have Mechila by Ribbis, and all Ribbis is based on Mechila. You know, the whole premise of Ribbis is that the person is paying it willingly, he's usually not paying it with a gun to his head, and still it's prohibited. So what's the Rambam trying to redefine the world now and say it's okay for a person to be mochel the repayment of ribbis?
Isn't part of the takara repaying it? If you don't pay it, so what? He's lacking some way of correcting what he did wrong.
Oh, so right. So then the question of his tshuva, and is that really relevant? That's an issue between the two of them. But just from a halachic perspective, is it at least permissible if they both agree?
But again, isn't part of his tshuva?
Like
if you do a takana might be repaying it.
Right, so normally that's true, but let's say I were to say, normally if I stole $100 from you, for me to properly do tshuva, I certainly have to pay it back.
Right.
But let's say I were to come to you and say, listen, you know, I stole $100 from you a couple of years ago, I wanted to do tshuva, I'm really sorry. Happens to be that I don't have the money anymore, you know, I'll work for it, next 10 years I'll work to try to make the money to pay you back. And you were to say to me, you know what, it's okay, I appreciate the fact that you came and apologized, I'm loyal. So then presumably that still works as far as tshuva is concerned, that my obligation to repay you for the stolen money, presumably you have the right to say amarchal. So I don't know if that affects my tshuva per se. But here in the case of ribbis, so do I have the right to say amarchal getting repaid? So the right that says to the Rambam, what are you talking about? That's what all ribbis is about, mechila, and we still don't allow it. So some suggest that the difference is that maybe the Ravid isn't maybe understanding the Rambam correctly, so the Magen Mishnah points out that maybe the Ravid is reading the Rambam as saying that he allows mechil in all directions. You can be mochel to pay ribbis, you can be mochel to give back ribbis, the whole story. Like, essentially against the Gemara and against the Torah, probably. So what the Magen Mishnah understands is that, no, look what the Rambam is talking about. Rambam is not saying that you can accept ribbis in the first place if the person is willing to do it. He's saying that after it's already paid, so then you can accept, you can be mochel getting paid back. So essentially what we have is three views in the Rishon. You have the view of the Gaonin, which is that mechila doesn't work at any stage. You can't willingly pay ribbis, and you can't willingly allow the guy not to pay you back. You have the Rambam according to the Raivid, which seems to say that mechila works in both places. You can pay it, and you can choose not to get paid back. And you have the Rambam according to the Magid Mishnah, which is that you're not allowed to pay ribbis even if you're mocho, but you can decline to get paid back. So how do you understand those three different theories? So it seems that the issue here is, again, are we talking about a interpersonal concept, or are we talking about a ritual concept? So if it's a ritual concept, so then that's the way many understood, and that's probably the view of the Gaonim. This is from beginning to end a ritual concept, and therefore there's no concept of mechila, right? Usually ritual should be equal to no mechila, and civil should be equal to allowing mechila. So
you also made it
Oh, so then that's going to come into the third position. As far as the Gaonim, we don't allow it in either place. So they seem to be understanding that it's a ritual issue across the board. The Rambam, if the Raivid was correct, you know, or if this reading of the Raivid and the Rambam is correct, if there really is a view out there that you could let Mechila go in either way, so then maybe that's understanding it as a interpersonal concept. Essentially, it's a Ben Adam Mechabero, and therefore Mechila should exist, should be possible to be Mechila either way. Now, there is a technicality there that maybe still there's a distinction between paying and taking it back, because that's how some Achronim understood the Rambam, that maybe the Rambam felt that there's no genuine free will when you're borrowing. When you're borrowing, so you might say you're voluntarily paying ribbis, but you feel compelled to because you need the money. So you put the ribbis out there, you say it's free will, but it's not really free will. So that, maybe some suggest that's the distinction, that really it's about the Ben Adam Mechavero, but he doesn't believe that the Mechila is genuine under those circumstances. But when you've already paid your ribbis and the guy's offering to pay it back to you, and now you're no longer a borrower who needs something, so you don't have any other motive to let it go, and you let it go willingly, so then maybe that is legitimate. That's how some understood. But what comes out from the Magid Mishnah's view is that there's no mechila to pay ribbis in the first place, but there is mechila when it's getting paid back. So that seems to suggest a split, that the initial paying of ribbis is a ritual prohibition. To pay back the ribbis is a ben adam mechavero. And that fits well with what we've been saying so far, that the initial deal of ribbis, that is that's an offense against God. To make this arrangement and to say, I'm only going to lend you the money after I have an agreement that you're going to pay me back interest, that's a ben adam mechavero. And the taking of the money is irrelevant. At that point, that's just a detail. That's the outgrowth of this deal. But the whole ben adam mechavero, the whole ben adam mechavero, is the fact that you made this deal. And therefore, you can't fix it by giving it back, because it's irrelevant. The fact that even if you never took it in the first place, it wouldn't be helped. It was the deal that you made that was a problem. So even if in the end you didn't collect the ribbis, you still would have committed just an offense. So that offense is essentially not reversible. You can do tshuva, but you can't undo that act. But therefore, the act, the mitzvah to give back ribbis, according to the Rambam, is a different thing. That's because now you have somebody else's money. Maybe it's a hardship to that person, maybe it isn't, but either way, you have somebody's money shalokit in, so then there's a ben adam mechavero to give it back. Then there's an interpersonal rule. And on that interpersonal rule, the guy in theory could be mochel. The person could say, I'm not interested.
So does that distinction play a role in the difference between interest on a loan versus interest as a penalty?
Not necessarily, because interest and penalty, so just to explain the context, and that could explain their setting. So there was a discussion about if you have, let's say, a rental agreement, and you say the rental agreement that you have to pay your rent by such and such time, and if you don't pay by the time, so then it goes up. And then maybe there's another clause after that that says if you don't pay the extra by a certain time, then it goes up even more. So on the surface, that is a ribbis problem. It may even be a ribbis deraisa problem in theory because of the way it's set up in the beginning. But the idea that you're going to collect more money as more time passes, so that progression is a time issue. Now in theory, it sounds like a semantic difference, but you could change the whole picture, and this may be valid, by saying that it's not about I want to collect money from waiting. I need to enforce the fact that you're supposed to pay on time. And if you're not going to pay on time, and that goes without any kind of punishment, so then you'll never pay on time. So therefore, we need a way to make people pay on time. So there's a knas, there's a penalty for not paying on time, and that knas happens to be monetary. So then there is an approach that could be a valid approach. The problem is, or the modification is, that would be true more if it's like a one-time thing. You say, you pay me on time, or there's a penalty that you owe me. But if it keeps increasing, if it goes on a progression that keeps the idea of the compound interest on top of that, there's an interest on the interest, so to speak. Because then after, once it starts becoming a scale going up, then it becomes interest ready. But the idea that it's just a way of enforcement, and that it's more localized, yeah, it does become a little bit of a semantic difference, but it's an important difference because it's an issue. You have to figure out exactly how you're doing it. But the theory would be such that if it's presented as this is our way of making sure to do what you have to, that's one thing. If it's a way of saying that here's how we'll collect the fact that we have to wait an extra month, so we want to profit off that month, and then we'll profit more off another month, et cetera, then it becomes ribbish, and that's problematic. So a little bit, it does go a little bit to how it's phrased, but it also is a function also of how it plays out, whether it's a one-time thing or something like that.
If it's ribbish is only to Jews.
Right.
Okay? So if it's Benoma Mako, but still, it's something, it's interpersonal. If you're lending someone something with interest, and you get used to it, even to non-Jews, it's something that's not good.
Right, you might advise, and that's an interesting topic.
And so all of a sudden you're doing something, so yes, we're supposed to take care of our brother.
Right.
What about our neighbor? What about our half-brother? Whatever that is.
Right, no, so you can make a case like that.
You're doing these predatory practices.
So predatory, as I said, predatory.
Okay, so you're doing these practices.
There's an important distinction, because predatory, I'll say.
Still doing these things.
Nice.
So that's not what we're about.
Right, it's not a minor difference. You know, the predatory, again, I think right, so getting used to it, I think you're right, that in general, when you have a midos type thing, that there is a reason to be machmir, even in cases where it doesn't technically apply because of that type of...
How are we allowed to do it? How did Hashem say, only do it for Jews, but you're allowed to do it for everyone else?
So I think especially if it comes to the perspective of the Avnei Nezer, that it's about, you know, the whole idea of a family relationship is that there are people who you treat as closer to you than other people. So once you accept that concept, then you can't always say that everything has to be the exact same no matter who you're dealing with. And it also goes to a question a little bit of there are some things which are more midos oriented, and there are some things which are more functional. Like I don't know if collecting interest necessarily is a mida kind of thing. That might be more of a business arrangement. Each one has its own details. Everything varies. And I'm not sure if it lends itself so much to that. But it's a fair question in general. And we're almost out of time. So maybe that's something we'll talk about more at a different time. I want to throw in at least one or two other cases before we're running out of time. What would you think of the following scenario, which also goes back to this question of whether we view paying back ribbis as a monetary thing or as a ritual thing, and also the question whether the money is legitimately yours or not. What would you say about the following scenario? Let's say I borrow $1,000, and we have an arrangement that I pay you $100 a year as interest. So 5 years pass, I've paid you $500 interest. Now I come to you after 5 years, and I say, I want to pay you back. I'm only going to pay you $500 because I've already paid you $500. And you say to me, no, the $500 you paid, as per our agreement, that was interest. Now, maybe you shouldn't have done that. That's your problem. You go to Shlomo Kippur and do tshuva. But right now, you owe me $1,000 because you haven't paid back anything from the principal. So what would you think about that? Do I owe $1,000 or do I owe $500?
You can't collect interest.
Correct. But Avi will say that I'm not collecting interest. I collected interest 5 years ago. So fine, I have to tshuva about that. That was a problem. But right now, I want to collect, whether he's from or not, I guess you'll have to figure out. It doesn't really go either way. But, sorry?
It's how you differentiate.
That was our agreement. I said that I will pay you $100 a year for interest. And every year I gave you $100. I said, here's the interest I owe you as per our agreement. So now you'll say that $100 was given to you.
There comes the thing about returning it. So basically,
exactly.
You pay nothing.
So he has an obligation to return it. That's clear. But he said, I'm not going to return it. Whatever. I'm violating my ritual obligation. Whatever it is.
Okay.
So right now,
I paid you nothing.
I'll deal with my own moral responsibility. But right now, you owe me $1,000.
No, because I paid you nothing.
Right.
I paid you interest. The question is, are you going to give it back? But I paid you nothing.
Right.
Of the principles. I owe you $1,000. You might owe me $500 that I should have paid you. That's a different story.
Right.
Because the interest, what happened to the interest? But I didn't pay you any of the principal. Because I never paid you any of the principal.
So it's a tricky question. So that was a topic of debate among the early Achronim. Achronim Chaim has an essay about this, and some suggest that we don't really have a real resolution here, because it's tricky. Because really, if I'm not allowed to, if I'm not obligated to rebbe, I can't pay them. I can't voluntarily pay it. So really, the burden is more on the, any way you look at it, the burden is more on the lender, because he should be giving it back anyway. But strictly speaking, what is the din? It's not really a resolved issue, and there's some who advocate you should make up sure, you should try to make some deal, because it makes some kind of a compromise, because we don't have a clear path yet. There are many other issues, a couple of other technical points. Just to quickly throw some out there, just to be aware of in our lives, things that come up in terms of ribbish, one should be aware that it doesn't just apply to cash, it applies to commodities also. So, for example, if I lend you a bowl of sugar, and you pay me back a bag of sugar, because you're so grateful, so then that's a problem of ribbish, which is different from saying, lending you items. If I lend you a watch, for example, so you can say, thank you so much for the watch, here's the watch back, and here's a dollar in gratitude. That you actually can do, because lending an object is called she'ela, that's not halva. So I can lend you an object where you're going to give me back the same object, and you can pay me for that. That's actually called rental. But you can pay for that. That's not a ribbis problem. When it does become a problem is if it's a consumable item, and you are going to give me back the value and then more, that's a problem. So it could either be cash that you will spend, or maybe it'll be food that you will eat and then give me back more food. But whatever it is, if it's a consumable item,
really lending,
right, then I'm essentially lending value. I'm essentially lending you the value of the sugar, and you're giving me back the value of the sugar. So then you can't increase that number. So that also becomes a major, major issue, which is way beyond our scope, when it comes to currencies. Currencies fluctuate, and if you're going to use a currency outside of your home currency, you get into very complicated issues as well. Ribbis also applies to other services, at least in the Drabbanan. So if I'm going to be nicer to you in any way, because you lent me money, that also gets into all kinds of problems, which again, beyond our scope. So we're essentially out of time. I don't know if there's interest in a fourth session of this. If there is, next week we'll still do Hanukkah, because we should take some time for Hanukkah. If there's interest.
You should look at Hefteresket. How do banks function there?
Okay, so you know what? I was about to say a word about Hefteresket. Let's make that a separate topic. So we'll come back and talk about Hefteresket, and then maybe we'll throw in a few more details. That'll be a separate part four, but not for next week, because we should pay attention to Hanukkah on some level. So next week we'll talk about Hanukkah. Sometime soon after that we'll talk about Hetereska, just so you shouldn't leave with no idea. Hetereska, there is a way for businesses to function and still collect interest, otherwise our economy would fall apart. How that happens and what type of mechanism is used, a complicated discussion, God willing, we will return to on a future date. Have a wonderful day. Shabbat Hanukkah. Next week we'll finish Hanukkah itself. And I'm going to